Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Barstool Investor, the resource for Californians that invest in out-of-state real estate. We're a community of real estate enthusiasts, newbies and pros, all navigating the world of assets and strategies, aiming for one thing, financial freedom. Grab your favorite drink, pull up a bar stool, and let's dive into the world of real estate investing, one casual conversation at a time. Now let's get started with today's episode.
Okay, well, hi, everyone. We have our guest for today, which is Angela Yan, someone who I've been connected with for over 2 years now, right? I think it's been over 2 years. For everyone, right? It's been a kind of a crazy period for everybody. But I'm really excited about this conversation today. Angela was probably one of the first people that I connected with that was an out-of-state investor. And her story is just absolutely inspiring. And so we're going to hear all about her journey to where she is today, you know, the lessons learned along the way and what her suggestions are, you know, going forward. But, you know, without any further ado, I am very happy to introduce you to Angela Yan. Angela, how are you today?
I am doing great. I just got back from an RV trip going all the way across the country. My business partner picked me up in Indiana because during the summer, I was visiting my properties in Columbus, Ohio, went to Florida, and then he picked me up in Indiana and took me all the way to the tip of Cape Town, Provincetown, and we just drove back to where we live in the beautiful wine country of Sonoma, Forestville. We are currently at the beautiful Juicy Ranch, and I am drinking a glass of their Vermentino. What are you drinking?
I am drinking a bottle of Pliny the Elder. So it's a great local brewery, if you haven't heard of it, right off of the Russian River. But whenever I see that on the menu, whenever I see that in any store, I have to go for it. It is a delicious beer.
Awesome. You know, I have to say, I love the name of your podcast, Barstool Investor. It is certainly my type of meetup.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's kind of our whole ethos, right? We wanted this to be a really casual environment just to, you know, have a conversation and talk about our favorite topic, which is real estate. And Angela, I have to say, man, you're what you've been up to over the last several weeks, I think it sounds like you're very much living the dream. And you know, we also know that you live out, you know, in Mexico City, half of the year as well.
4 to 5 months a year. Yeah.
4 to 5 months of the year. Yeah. And which is also just a beautiful city. So I guess, Angela, if you don't mind, just introducing yourself to the audience, you know, a little bit about your background, and then we can maybe just start diving into the details.
Well, you know, my real estate investing journey started back in the day when I got out of nursing school, and maybe a lot of your listeners could be too young by then, but back in 2001, during one of the first dot-com boom in the San Francisco Bay Area, I'm from San Francisco, and my mother and her brother think that they want to be a flipper. That project kind of went south, and they're just basically begging me that, like, we need to go to the bank. We're out of money. We need you to apply for a loan. And I didn't have a job. I just graduated nursing school, and they were just passing out money. I went to the bank, and they're like, well, do you have a college degree? And I said, yeah, I got a college degree, and you got a social security number, right? I'm like, yes, I do. No problem. What property are we talking about? Well, this property that, you know, we're close to finishing. Sure, no problem. So that was pretty much the top of that, you know, market cycle. And luckily, we were able to load off that house. That was like 2001 in Oakland. So that I would say that was one of my first projects. And then after that, I do not know what the heck I was doing still. But with a little bit of luck, the market cycle was about to gum up a little bit. My mother talked me into buying my second property. Well, you know, your brother's going to go to Seattle. Why don't you check out that market? So that was 2003. And I was able to pick up a 3-bedroom, 2-bath home in Seattle in the Redmond district, if anyone knows. Yeah. That was only 20 minutes away from the Microsoft campus. Very nice house. I was able to pick it up for $325. Wow. And then it was a really, really hard time then. to 2009 because I held on to it and held on to it and thinking that I just want to sell it when it's worth $500,000 and then it just keep tanking and tanking and tanking. Mm. And even then, I still did not know what the heck I was doing because I sold that house in 2010 because I was so negative every month. But luckily, I had a nursing job. So you need money. Just work a little harder. Just pick up extra shifts. Mm-hmm. But pretty much, you know, my nursing career pretty much helped finance my real estate hobby. Yeah. I call it a hobby because you really have to be passionate about everything about real estate. You know, yeah. It's a very relationship based and you do get to meet some amazing people, but you know, the way that I look at it, that you got to pay tuition somehow. People try to go to Harvard, you know, they get accepted. They have three loans for $500,000 is not unusual. You just have to pay your tuition somehow when it comes to the real estate game, you know? And then I bought my ATM machine, which was 2009 in San Francisco, finally. Okay. And with 5% down, FHA wow. loan.
Okay.
A condo in Soma, $439,500 with a $4,000 buyer credit. Uh-huh. So I didn't even have the down payment. I just borrowed the money from my 401k. And wow, ever since okay. then, that yeah, that was the beginning of my portfolio that I took to Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. Wow. There's a lot to unpack there. And we also have to expand on what took you to Columbus, Ohio as well. But I want to go all the way back. So it sounds like your mother was really kind of leading the charge in a lot of ways, right? Like she was involved with the initial property, you know, back in 2001. She pushed you into, you know, investing into a house in Seattle. Did she have a background or what really motivated her? Where did she kind of get this insight from?
You know, she's always been a risk taker. She is mm-hmm. like the risk taker, the doer of the family between my dad and I. But my father is the one with the broker real estate license. But she's the one that constantly always have an eye on some kind of price. So I maybe got that from her. You know, she's definitely a risk taker. And, you know, she mm-hmm. got burned a couple times, but it is what it is. It's part of the game, you know. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. And I really like what you said about tuition, right? Because I think, you know, I say it all the time that many people are contemplating, you know, should I go to business school or, you know, I really just want to kind of start my own thing. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, as you've all learned, you learn so much by doing, right? There's only so much you can learn from, you know, even a podcast or learn from a book. Mm-hmm. Like eventually you just have to go and take the leap. And you might lose, you know, tens of thousands, you know, of dollars, like, you know, in almost like in a worst case scenario, as long as you've underwritten properly and the property holds value, you're probably going to be okay. You're not going to be out hundreds of thousands of dollars like you would if you were to go to business school and then never get that time back again. Right. So I think like, you know, not necessarily telling people that they shouldn't do this or they shouldn't do that. But I do think that, you know, it's funny how we seem to have these conflicting opinions as a society around it's OK to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on getting a degree that you're not quite sure is going to yield an ROI or, you know, but we're not comfortable spending, you know, some money on like, you know, buying property and learning mistakes that way. So I think that was really insightful of you.
I really think, you know, all in all, real estate, it is the best investment for relatively a lot of people doesn't know what they're doing mm-hmm. because, you know, the secret sauce is, you know, how do you succeed? How do you win? Right. It's mm-hmm. like you buy low. So how do you buy low? You buy now. You want to buy low, you buy now. Mm. You sit on it, you hold on to it, you season it, you will win, and then you will get your money back. Mm-hmm. That very, very secret concept, you know. And then there's nowhere in the world where, in the United States where a bank will allow you to buy any kind of investment with just 5% down. Right. I mean, they would never do that. You go up to the bank, it's like, hey, I want to buy $1 million in Tesla stocks. How about 5% down? Give me a loan. And doesn't exist. But when it comes to real estate, this country loves it. 3.5%, 5%, we got you. Here's a loan.
Yes.
Just got to have good credit. Make sure we like the property. You're good to go.
Right.
It's one of the best places.
Oh, no, I think very well said. Both of those points that you mentioned are very, very related, right? The reason why, you know, real estate values over the long run tend to go up and to the right in the country is because this country does basically subsidize housing, right? And it's actually, to your point, most countries don't have a 30-year mortgage. And when we're talking about interest rates rising, right, it's all relative. That, you know, if you were to go to a different country where, you know, the interest rate would basically reset every few years, or, you know, is obviously a lot more volatile than what you would have in the United States, then it'd be much tougher to actually be investing in real estate. So that's a big reason why investing in real estate in the United States is a very, as far as investments go, relatively contained from a risk perspective. There was another thing. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I just want to add that, you know, during my RV trip, I have to say, I mean, my opinion of the United States right now, what's happening, our country is really economically strong. We may not feel it. You know, we're bitching and moaning about like, oh, my God, eggs is like $6. Well, that's because you have to buy cage-free or something, you know, but yeah, there's a way to work around it. I mean, yes, there is inflation, but it is not like Argentina or Venezuela and in those countries. You know, it's going up, but our wages is also going up too. I mean, we keep raising interest rates because we're so economically strong. Let me tell you, during my RV trip, just coming back, going all the way across to Provincetown, Bidenomics is happening. Oh my God. It's like the road work, everyone's at work. I mean, freeways, it is happening. I'm seeing my own eyes. I mean, Bidenomics. Real. It's like you hear it, but I'm like, I'm seeing it. I mean, like the Amazon trucks on the roads constantly. I mean, so there's opportunities. I mean, during all sorts of like anywhere during the market cycle, you know, especially now or anytime, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like to your earlier point, right? The best time to invest in real estate was yesterday and the next best time is today. And again, especially in a market where things are going up and to the right. And you're right, like the reason why the Fed has to keep, you know, holding the interest rate and possibly raising it is very much because we are in a very resilient economy, right? And I think that's, you know, it's hard to see that sometimes when you're simultaneously seeing a lot of news, coming out that's you're trying to strike fear in the population, because that's ultimately what gets viewership and that's what gets readership as well, right? People are more attracted by that clickbait. But if you look at the numbers, you can see that it is a very resilient economy. You know, Angela, there was something else that you mentioned as well, which I think was has kind of inspired me to actually, I ended up writing an article around it. And it's about the fact that it seems like a lot of podcasts and, you know, a lot of the rhetoric around the W-2 job, right, is very negative. Where people are all viewing their W-2 jobs as, you know, the enemy. And really, they're trying to escape it so that they could become financially free and, you know, and just never have to work again. But I think you made a very good point that, look, your nursing job was what helped fund, you know, your real estate ventures, right? And so I think there is a slight reframing that can be done, which is the W-2 job can, you know, and it's not true for everybody, but in a lot of cases, you can instead view it as your ally, right? That is the thing that gives you the financial stability. That is the thing that will give you access to loans. You know, that is also the thing that gives you access to a network as well. And it's also a place to cultivate skill sets that, you know, it may not be obvious on the surface, but may be translated to real estate. So I want to understand, like, you know, was there a certain point when you decided that you want to take this full time, you want to make real estate your thing? Was there a specific moment where that happened? It sounds like into that. I want to ask about this cash cow that you talked about, that you mentioned in 2009. But was that the moment, or was it always part of the long-term plan?
You know, I did, when I, my first two properties, I did not know what I was doing, because just to give you an idea, I did not know what I was doing. I sold that Redmond house in 2010. I finally just suffered through the bottom, and then like things were just about to go up. I was like, I'm done. Oh my God, I'm so done like shoving out money. So it was 2010. I sold that house for $450,000 only. And do you know what the house is worth now? $1.6 million. Because it's in Redmond. But yeah, I did not know anything about the market cycle. So when I say, you know, well, however you want to slice the cake and take this tuition thing when real estate, you know, you just move on and then you go to the next deal. But then finally, after that, like around 2000, after 2009, I was starting to get a little burned out in my nursing career. You know, I was making a good salary. You know, I would say north of $200,000 for as a nurse, full time nurse. And with enough seniority that if I want some more shifts, I can just work as much as I can. You know, OT is awesome and in the Bay Area. So I felt comfortable that, like, you know, if I ever go in a hole, I'll just fucking, you know, go work more and grab some more shifts, you know, to finance to finance my real estate hobby or addiction. Yeah.
Right.
But finally, you know, in 2018, I got so burned out enough that in nursing that I just know I couldn't do it until I was 65. So I decided, I just reached inside my 2009 condo in San Francisco.
Okay.
And as soon as I have enough equity, I just yanked it out. And so I was probably able to yank out about $250,000 out of that condo. I think at the time the rates were like even five percent or so. And I just took it, and I did go with a mentor. I paid him $15,000 to teach me what a cap rate is. Just start from the beginning. He started analyzing deals, family deals. And of course I really got immersed myself, you know, bigger pockets. I read David Green's book, you know, long distance real estate investing. And then I also read his book, The Burr Book. And in Columbus, Ohio, I bought, 2018, I bought a 9-unit and then a 4-unit when I got back to California, all within the same transaction, on the same street. And then the next time I went back, like 5 months later, I bought a, picked up a house for $32,000, paid cash because I still have money in the bank from my proceeds. And then after that, I picked up a duplex. I started burring. Picked up a duplex for $125,000. Renovate remotely. That was my lesson with contractors. Very, you know, sweat equity there. But I was able to do it from out of state. Like David Green said, you know, if you don't, unless you're really in the, you know, really know what you're doing, you're going to be either down the street or it's just phone calls. You're going to have to recruit someone to consult you anyways. I mean, unless you really know what you're looking at, you're going to need to hire someone to take a look, and you're going to need expert opinions anyways. So that gave me the confidence to burr. So I burred like maybe two or three more times after that. But I picked up homes for like $40,000 with a fire in it and then put $120,000. But eventually, I really liked homes that was really, really messed up. Because I know that if you buy messed up things, you need completely everything. If you picked it up low enough, you know, brand new HVAC, brand new electric, brand new roof, you just know your own beast, you know. Luckily, Columbus is a great market. It does offer cash flow and it does offer appreciation. And in my opinion, it's probably the San Francisco, Ohio.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it definitely is. you know, relative to any other city in Ohio, it's definitely the much more you know, metropolitan and you know, growing and more liberal city. You know, I think again, like, there's a lot to unpack there. So it sounds like, what it sounds like is that, you know, you learned a hard lesson from the Redmond property. And, you know, I think what the saying goes, right? You either win or you learn. And you learn the lesson that, you know, it, hold on to this property, let the cycle run its course. And it seems like that's the lesson. That's what you applied that lesson to the San Francisco property, where you knew you bought it at probably, you know, at the bottom of that cycle, or like towards the bottom or just after it. And then you held on to it until you had built enough equity, so then that way you could draw it out. So it sounds like you took a really good lesson out of that. Okay. And then the mentor.
Yeah, it's so, like, you know, you want, like I said, you want to buy low, you got to buy now.
right. Exactly. And the mentor that you referenced. So how did you decide how did you find a mentor? Like what inspired you to go in that direction? Was it a Bigger Pockets podcast that suggested that you should do that, or?
It was actually YouTube, I think. He is actually the author of Multifamily for Dummies. And I just kind of followed him on some YouTube videos. And then he's actually from the Bay Area. And we worked side by side. We just analyzed a bunch of deals. But I was really into multifamily at the time, because all I ever bought was single family. I really want to get into the multifamily realm, you know? Yeah. So I figured, you know what, that it was $15,000 to have him work, hold my hand, you know, but after analyzing deals every week, you know, enough that, you know, I was able to come up with cap rates, sale prices, you know, analyzing deals. A little out of touch now, you know, my math is not so good anymore. Some of the different things, but I felt confident. It's like, okay, let's just start with this 9-unit. And one night I would, during my insomnia, I was like, oh my God, where is Youngstown? You know, you can get like $50,000 houses. Like, that's crazy. And then I even had to like look up like, where is, like, what is famous in Ohio? Is it? And I'm thinking, well, what kind of university, like what kind of school is in Ohio? I knew nothing about it. And then I had to like really Google, like, oh, is that Ohio State maybe? I'm like, where is Ohio State? a lot of great things happened in my head during insomnia, actually. so I was like, I opened the map of Columbus, Ohio. I looked at it. I was like, wow, they got like big time universities, big time hospitals, you know, lots of parks. And, you know, I'm a, you know, nurse by trade, so I'm very familiar with hospitals. And I just know hospitals make fantastic employers. Because you need everything from janitors to nurses to lab techs, nurses, doctors, pharmacy, you know, that's us all day long. So, you know, I tend to like university teaching places, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with Nationwide Children's Hospital, you've got Wexner, and you've got a whole ecosystem of, you know, Wexner affiliated and other hospitals. It's a very, and then obviously the university is one of the largest in the country. And so it's a very good market for many of those reasons. But you said it yourself, you weren't very familiar with Ohio. So how did you decide on Columbus, Ohio as the market?
Because of the map. I opened the map and I was like, you know, that's enough hospitals, enough research for me. And it's got a great university presence. Uh-huh. And then I just started reaching out. And that's when I, you know, I was listening to quite a bit of Bigger Pockets. And then I was just randomly, you know, looking at listings. And I picked up my 9-unit under $400,000.
That's amazing. So, wow. And, you know, and for the audience, actually, I think that 9-unit is how you and I.
That's a tiny house in Bay Area.
Right. But that's how you and I connected, right? It was on that 9-unit. I'm pretty sure. Was it the Howie? Yes, exactly. So the I Howie think that's, That's full circle, actually. I'm glad that you brought that up. So for the audience, the way that Angela and I met was me and a couple of my partners were looking for a multifamily property to purchase. And we ended up coming across this, I get the 9-unit and the 4-unit that were right adjacent to each other. Mm-hmm. And it didn't end up working out, but I think we tried to make it work. We wanted to find something that would be mutually beneficial for both sides.
Yeah.
And then that's how you and I got connected. And we obviously, now have our mutual connection.
It's been golden since.
Exactly.
Sorry, Anish. Yeah. I had 11 offers. You didn't win.
I know. And I respect that.
I actually end up, I did pick the best and the highest. And it fell out of contract. And I just was just tired. I just did not want to get into 1031 exchange fiasco. But you know what? That was like 2 years ago. That package, I had a 4-unit and a 9-unit together. I think my asking price was 1.1. And now it's 1.3.
Mm-hmm.
So you hold on to it another 2 years. I technically get another $200,000.
That's right. Now back to your earlier point, right? Just, in a country like this where real estate is incentivized, and yes, look, there'll be cycles, right? Like the prices will, in the short period of time, will go up and down, but over the long run, they'll go up and to the right. So if you can hold on, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And there was one other point that you mentioned, Angela, which was you were nervous about doing BRRRRs. And, you had read in David Green's book that ultimately you have to consult an expert anyway. And I think I might have been you that told me this too, that when you're out of state and you're looking at a new property, if you don't have a background in construction or what are you actually looking at, right? Like, how couldn't you possibly know, especially if you come from a different, completely different career path? Like I do, I work in biotechnology, right? Like, how do you know what you're looking at? But if you were to have a trusted real estate agent, a trusted property manager, a GC, an inspector, those are 8 trained eyeballs evaluating the property. And if you can trust them, then you should be able to, then you will have a very good understanding of whether that property is a safe one for you to invest in. So obviously trust is the critical ingredient there, and building. And that's why you were saying that this is very much a field in which you have to, you got to build those relationships at the end of the day. I want to fast forward a little bit. So you started with that, the 9 and the 4-unit, then you started burring. And then I guess, what happened next, what happened over those next several years? Cause that was back in, it sounds like 2018, 2019.
Yeah. So my last project, I've also been doing, so with that San Francisco condo, I picked up in 2009. Eventually, I actually picked up another condo just literally around the corner. I picked up a second San Francisco condo. So what I did with that, I'm like actually a little bit an OG when it comes to Airbnb. I've been doing Airbnb since 2010. I actually met Brian Chesky.
Wow.
When he was just starting his, Airbnb. So I would go to the headquarters. I get invited to go in because I was a super host and all that. I got offered stock options at the really, really early prices, maximum share.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah. So I've been doing short-term rental since 2010. Not as arbitraging as crazy as everyone's doing it now, but I'm definitely familiar with that concept. So, 2009, I just went all in. I picked up so many properties. So one of them, I was actually in Georgia. I picked up a single family home with a little bit of intention, maybe I'll just flip it. But another construction fiasco that went south. My contractor said it would be a $45,000 job. And of course, he just screwed me over and I had to hire another one for $40,000. And then by then, the math didn't work. But luckily, during a lot of these screw-ups, time is so on your side when it comes to real estate. When that market cycle is just going to go, when you're riding the curve like this, I have so many contractors just did not deliver. And you're like, what the fuck, dude? You're like, it's like pulling teeth. But somehow time was on my side. And by the time they're done, my property like easily appreciated like sometimes $30,000, $40,000 because they just can't get together. But by the time I was done, the market was just kind of like, I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I don't know, like either hate you now or like really get pissed off at you or like maybe it worked out.
Yeah. Wow. You know? I had no idea that you were like one of the original Airbnbers. I mean, the fact that you started that early, the fact that you met Brian Chesky, like that's like, there's again, there's so much to unpack there too. So look, I mean, like it sounds like, you know, one of the big lessons that you've learned is try to hold on, right? Be patient. Like this is not a get rich quick game. Real estate is a long-term game. It sounds like you've learned. Yeah. You have. Yeah. Okay. So it's like, what other lessons, because you meant that it sounds like pivoting, but then also it sounds like you've learned some lessons around managing, you know, out of state, you know, construction teams and GCs. So if you wouldn't mind just sharing a couple of your lessons or more around both of those topics.
You have to I did build a core four, like David Green says in his book, you know, you got to have a team. You know, remember, mm-hmm. you got to have a really good, strong property manager, really amazing real estate agent, great contractor. I would just actually recruit 2 or 3 contractors under your belt if you can, you know, make sure they get endorsements, you know, and then I would dare to say you got a really good loan guy. I got 3 or 4 of those I can call around, mm-hmm. you know, just have it immediately because you never know when you have a deal and you're just kind of like, you know, financing is key. And then I would dare to add like, you know, really good insurance agent. And then I also one more person that's also the title people that you can close mm-hmm. on time. And, okay. you know, you can actually go back and like negotiate title fees back and forth. I mean, those things are negotiable. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess everything's negotiable. You can go like,
everything's negotiable. Just ask, you know, you never know, but you know, they would like to earn your business. It doesn't hurt to always shop around. But how I became full time is not by a little bit of choice, but enjoying 2020, I could no longer be a nurse because I had a stroke. Mm-hmm. So luckily, I started my real estate journey in 2018 and I was able to build a little bit of net worth. So ever since then, I just become full throttle with the real estate investing. I just started hustling a bit and just constantly looking at deals. I obviously had equity, you know, you always just cash out, refinance. You got to continue to make great deals. Relationship is everything. I mean, I'm a little bit of an extrovert, so I actually like meeting people. Love building relationships. And so that's why I feel like real estate is one of the best favorite hobbies I have ever adopted. You know, I don't even call this a job because I just have fun doing it. Yeah. You know, just continue to build relationships.
Yeah. So, I mean, thank you for sharing. I mean, like, so it sounds like relationships is probably the other, like if there's, holding on is one. Number two is relationships, really invest in those. I guess, specifically around like, you know, managing those out of state construction teams or, you know, is there anything that you've learned that, you know, from your experiences that if you were to go back in time, you may have been able to, you know, go through those experiences a little bit more smoothly, you know, more for anybody else who's probably getting into their first construction projects. What advice would you share to that individual?
I would definitely visit your property more so than you would think you need to. You know, I most of my big chunk of my portfolio is in Columbus, Ohio. So I do try to go there at least once or twice a year, you know, but I do talk to my property manager every week, my real estate agent almost every day. And then when I'm on a project, I'm talking to my construction contractors every day. We FaceTime. So luckily I'm PST and Ohio is EST. So I, when I was at the hospital, I did a PM shift. I don't have to be at work until like maybe 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock sometimes. So I wake up in the morning and, you know, things are already rolling back in Ohio time. So, constant relationship every, that was like my other job. I mean, but it's also like my other passion, you know, I really do talk to them on a very regular basis. I'm very on top of it, you know? So, I mean, some people are into that. Some people are not, but I don't, I actually like picking on the phone and just like, hey, how's it going? Yeah. You know, let's FaceTime, show me what's going on.
Yeah. It's taking accountability, right? I think, you know, again, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, material out there that says, hey, you know, just make it a senator and forget it. Truly passive income. You know, you can check in, you know, if you want. But I think if you really want to take control of your future and you know, make, you know, have it go well, I think there is something to be said about just rolling up your sleeves and at least just being present, right? Like, it's not necessarily about micromanaging, but it's more about just, you know, trust but verify, right? And I think that's, you know, that's still important at the end of the day. So I guess, like, you've been on an incredible journey. And, you know, knowing what you know now, are the things that you would have been done differently, you know, 5-10 years ago? Or do you feel like you did it in the exact way that, you would have anyway?
Oh, you know, what would I do differently? I'm really kind of happy and satisfied. Like, the, you know, I'm a little bit humble person. You know, looking back, I'm not sure if I would do anything differently because I'm really happy with all the people that I've met and continue to have as, you know, relations, you know, even though there are times that went south, but I'm very like kind of philosophical in that way. I mean, you know, I learned, but I have to say, you know, in order to survive as a real estate investor, you have to be able to pivot and you have to be able to, you know what, is it a big, you know, when a deal is in front of you, you have to like, what are the potentials? Is this a flip? Is this appreciation play? Is, would this make like a good short-term rental? Would this make a good medium-term rental? You know, I recently got into my first project after listening to Sam Riggert's podcast with his introduction to co-living. And I was actually in Puerto Vallarta at the time. And he just inspired me. So after that, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to start looking at 3,000 square feet homes. And I picked one up in a really good zip code last year in very close to university. It was a 5-bedroom, 2.5-bath home. And my fantastic real estate agent, Liz Grulick, and my fantastic contractor, Hector, in Columbus, Ohio, showed up to it. And they're like, this is great. And I'm like, can I pull 6 bedrooms, 7 bedrooms out of it? We just FaceTimed. And, you know, like David Green says, you know, you got a value add. So that was my first co-living project. So I turned a 5-bedroom, 2.5-bath home into a 7-bedroom, 3-full-bath home. But I did it luxe. Yeah. I have like waterfall rain showers and marble kitchen countertops and high design. But I also, one of my passion, one thing cool about real estate, it just allows me to be really creative as well. I mean, I love picking, I love design. I like picking tiles. I like looking at pretty things. And I kind of, you know, it was a fun project for me. So so that's my first co-living facility. I'm able to get $950 to $1,000 a room. First says that's what I'm getting out of my 9-unit, all my apartments right now, in part of like a C class neighborhood. I'm only, you know, those kind of rents are like $975. So, but it, for me, what I learned now though, honestly, looking back, you know, if you can buy the best zip code that you can, you should do it, especially during these times. Because everything, you know, we're coming down now. Sellers are, they're not desperate, but you just have to be creative. But I think if you want to buy in a good zip code right now, this is definitely your opportunity. My opinion is that as soon as these interest rates just drop a point, you guys will be back at this bidding war. because there's already there's already pinned up money. It just the math doesn't work sense. You know, it doesn't make sense. So that's why, you know, I'm actually selling my Georgia house on a subject to this guy that I'm closing it on it tomorrow. So yeah, I'm definitely all of a sudden creative financing is a good play, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I mean, you just got to be really creative and really be able to step out the box, you know, in order to survive the real estate journey.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for the audience, I've had a chance to see Angela's co-living property, at least through photos, and it is beautiful. It is an incredible property. And just, you know, for the audience as well, for your reference, like these are furnished units, like she mentioned, a very luxe property and catering to travel nurses, correct? So it's more of a midterm, you know,
nurses,
model.
You know,
But
comfortable places.
Yeah. And so subject to, I think that that would be very helpful for the audience to understand. They may not know what that means. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of describing what subject to is.
Yeah. So subject to is basically you are sort of taking over the owner's note. You know, you basically offer him a price and he is like, okay, you can take over the note. If it makes sense, then usually there's a loan process for the rest of his equity or her equity. Usually that's due a little later. So you can actually even subject to 1031 too with that. It's, you know, if you can find a seller with a good note, I think it's a really good strategy, you know, but you have, of course, you know, the incentive for that seller is to that you are going to pay a little bit extra, but it's a really good way of getting in because there's a little bit of finesse to it because, you know, you technically shouldn't do it with the note. I mean, every promissory note in this country has a clause, you know, that you shouldn't be do that. It's no. But it doesn't get recorded that in a way that it flags. There is a little bit of go around, but it's been people have been doing it for a while, actually.
And a win-win situation, right? Which is what all this comes down to. So I think that's, you know, a very important strategy to explore. No, it makes a lot of sense. And I realize that, wow, we just like that, you know, we're kind of coming to towards the end of our podcast time, but I do want to, you know, cover a few more questions, Angela. I think, looking ahead, right? I think one of the things that you talked about in our conversation today is, that you rode the wave, right? Like, and I think when you're in a market that's on the upswing, you know, things will work in your favor, right? But clearly we're in a very different environment right now, right? We're more potentially, you know, who knows, approaching a, you know, maybe a trough or not. Nobody can really predict the future. But what advice do you have for those who are just getting started today? Like, what is your outlook on how to approach today's market?
My advice is to any new investor picking up their first property, don't get cheap. Just, you know, you win when you close and you own the property. Like I said, you know, how do you buy low? You buy now. If you don't have a deal, you don't close, you don't have nothing. I'm only speaking from the opinion, like I have like five properties that I've listed, and some of these buyers were like trying to nickel and dime me for $2,000, and I'm like, $2,000 is really not a lot of money for me. It's like next, I mean, it's like, I don't really have to sell because I get really good notes on them, but it's just kind of like it amazes me, you know. And also don't go there. I mean, you win when you close. And don't, you know, the analysis paralysis thing, it's real and you got to get over it because, you know, you may lose a little here, but you're going to gain it somewhere else. But until you own the property, you just don't win. You're just not because you don't own it. So therefore, you got nothing.
Yeah,
you're totally not in the game. you know, and then also with interest rates too. I mean, there is not much of a difference with a quarter point, you know, half a point, you know, it's all about the same. I mean, there's definitely a huge difference between 3%, 4%, 5%, but you know, you just want to work with a lender that's going to get you to closing. Otherwise you got nothing.
Yeah.
You got nothing. You know, fine.
Yeah. You know? You win when you buy. Right. And I think that's definitely the mantra. And I think you did a lot of value add properties, right? Where you were buying low, these properties needed a lot of work. And then you did a lot of value add to the property, which forced the appreciation. Right. And I think there's two sides of the coin, right? There's the natural market appreciation, which you can't always control. Right. But if you're willing to hold on long enough, you're going to get that piece of the puzzle. And then if you buy right, if you have a good agent that's going to help you find good properties in good locations, and you do the right type of rehab that's going to really drive value on the property, then you win when you buy, right? That's how you win. But then again, like on the other side of the coin, you have many people who are just want to do a deal to do a deal, and then they end up overpaying for things, and they can certainly get in trouble that way. So I think there's obviously a balance there.
But I think if you buy in the right zip code, you know, which is your opportunity right now to buy in a good zip code. I mean, back in 2018, when I was like ready to just back up the track and buy everything on earth, you know, analyzing the deals, it's like I couldn't get into those really, really expensive class A, B zip codes because, you know, I was beginning investor at the time, you know, you've got your eyes on the cash flow and you just pay one way or the other, you know, depends on how much you can afford. I bought into a C-class property, you know, when I picked up my apartment buildings, but to what it's worth, the cash flow was amazing. And all the little seasoning stuff, you know, turnovers, you know, renovations and stuff, you know, it just always evened out. It always paid for itself. Like I always had my mortgage paid off, you know, like I said, you know, 2009, I bought my San Francisco property 5% down on a $489,000 condo. What is that, like $30,000? And now my net worth that I've grown out of that little condo in San Francisco is made me millions. Just out of, you know, the cash on cash return on that is crazy.
Right.
You know? But you pay asking if you. It's okay. Like I said, you want to buy low, you buy now.
buy now. You, so if you're in a good zip code. Yeah.
And I mean, you can buy the best zip code that you need.
Right. I mean, if you just think about how do the wealthiest people in the world make money? It's not through the cash flow. It's through big equity plays like that, right? Like that's ultimately, you know, what. And so if that's what's making the wealthiest people in the world, you know, even wealthier, then that's probably a strategy that we should all employ as well. And I think I once heard a phrase that, you know, cash flow is defense, whereas the equity is offense, right? So the cash flow, you know, you know, don't necessarily stress about that being the thing that's going to get you out of your day job. It's you know, use it to obviously make sure that the property can hold its own and that it's able to cover any expenses and unforeseen expenses. But ultimately where you win is through the appreciation, ideally force. So then that way you're a bit more in control of your destiny, but then also you'll get a little bit of boost from, you know, a market appreciation as well. Angela, so you are now in this position. You've been on this journey for quite some time. You've been pretty invested in Columbus. What are you most excited about? You know, I guess, you know, now we're approaching the end of 2023. So what, looking ahead, you know, what is Angela Yan? What are your goals? And, you know, what do you see yourself focusing on next?
You know, I definitely want to buy in the best zip code possible. I also want to look at properties that have a lot of potential for growth. You know, I'm always wanted to boost as much NOI as possible, you know, and I'm open. Like I'm really into the co-living thing. I think that model is pretty up and coming. All my tenants that are in my co-living house right now in Columbus, they're there from a month to 6 months. I love it that they're not there long-term, because if I don't like them, then it's like, I can just, you know, Bon Voyage. But then under one roof, you know, the turns would never be like an apartment unit. You know, some of my turns sometimes in apartment units are like $5,000-$6,000. You know, I'm just turning over, you know. And then I have a cleaner in there that's in there every week, so I know it's kept. I always like my Airbnb listings because it's constantly clean and it's constantly taken care of, you know. And then also Airbnb collects your rent, and it's like you don't have to chase them down or anything like that. It's a really cool concept, you know. So I think I like that kind of model. I think I'll continue probably explore that a little more. It allows me to be creative. You know, but I think right now it's a perfect opportunity to get into, you know, the best zip code as possible, because like you said, you know, appreciation, equity is a play. Cash flow is just not happening right now. If you analyze any of these numbers, you're going to be like, you're like, how upside down are you going to be? You know, even though you got a job, you know?
Yeah.
But if you can afford it and it's a good zip code and it's only going to appreciate and, you know, I say go for it. Like, you know, you only win when you own.
Yeah.
And one thing about real estate is just you can control so many things, you know. Stocks, you can't. You know, when you own a bunch of Tesla stocks, you know, Elon Musk is not going to allow you to pick light bulbs. And no, you're not going to paint and renovate, you know, because when you own real estate, it's your own. You can control like who you want to have in there, you know, cheap roof, expensive roof, expensive tile, not expensive tile, you know. You can control whatever you want to control. You know, you are your own destiny, however you want to play it, you know.
Right.
I think it's I just love real estate just for everything that's in it. You can be creative. You can constantly going to meet new people. You're constantly learning. And there's so many ways of being creative to build your net worth, you know. It's an amazing journey, but you know, you got to get in the game.
Got to get in the game. You have to get in the game in order to play it. That makes sense.
Got to get in the game.
Well, I mean, look, like this podcast is listened to by like the diversity of people, right? And so as it relates to your goals, is there anything that you would would you like to make an ask, right? If there's something that you would like help with, or any way in which our community could basically, you know, give back to you, you know, is there anything that we could help you with?
You know, I would love to just continue to grow the your podcast, and okay. I want everyone to continue to give feedbacks, because, you know, Anish, I have to say, ever since I met you, I've seen you grow. I mean, you are just kicking butt, and in a way, it just makes me want to step up my game. I'm like, I need to be doing PowerPoints to city councils, you know, in Ohio, and start mingling with politicians. That's another level, you know. So I want everyone to continue to just to support your podcast, honestly. Nice. Because you just done some really strong work, you know, and you're only gonna recruit the best in this community.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. So, I mean, I guess, you know, one question I always like to ask is, you know, who do you think we should bring on next in this podcast? Is there someone in your network that you think that we should be inviting?
You know, you should have some real estate agents.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe bring in Liz.
I would love to bring in Liz. Yeah. I think bring in Liz
Frulich.
Okay. Well, then that's what we'll do.
Just because, you know, that woman has worked so hard and she works for free and she works from her soul, you know?
I couldn't agree more.
I have to say, you know, she's just one of the smartest person that I have worked with in this business. Mm-hmm. Like, and the dedicated way that she knows time and dedicated, know? And she's just willing to sell anything, but just to build relationships, you know? I real estate agents doesn't get enough recognition.
Yeah.
You know, well,
the good ones.
Because
the good
people
ones,
like
right?
look at their commission and it's like they work so hard and they work so much for so much for free. So much.
I think Liz is such an outlier. I mean, and just to the audience, right? I think I don't think I could accomplish half of what I've accomplished in Columbus if it wasn't for Liz Grulich. She, if you are interested in investing in Columbus, Ohio, I would be very happy to introduce you to her. She is an absolute rock star. She's a true investor-friendly real estate agent. And, you know, she's still like, surprises me in terms of how much work she does. Like, I have referred other people to her, and you know, they tell me when I meet them at meetups that, like, oh yeah, I spent 2 hours with Liz. I'm like, how is that possible? She spent an hour with me, like, this morning. Like, where is she finding the time?
Not to mention about it, though.
She's so passionate about it. Yeah, so she's an incredible person to work with. And yeah, I mean, Angela, thank you so much for that connection. That it's just been really, really
incredible thing. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she really knows title too. Like, when it comes to reading those things that puts you to bed, all those contracts, and, like, you know, she started out with title. So she can just go on the website and find you about permits, what was there, what's there. I mean, lots of information, you know. That is, I'm just so lucky to be working with her. I mean, she's.
Yeah, well, Angela. This was such a pleasure. I feel like I'm so glad that we were able to have this conversation. I'm so glad that we had an opportunity to share your story with the Barstool community. You know, I suspect that this is going to be a real interest to a lot of people. And I look forward to just continuing our relationship. I feel like there's so much that we can, that I've learned from you and vice versa. So just it's been really amazing. And I think to the audience, just a real, you know, just credit to, you know, relationship building. It works, and it's a great thing, and it expands
everything.
Your life. Yeah.
Yeah, it's everything. Yeah.
Awesome.
Anish, thank you so much. I love your community, Barstool Investing. I love it. So cheers to you.
Cheers to you, Angela.
From Juicy Ranch.
Exactly. From San Francisco.
Thank you so much. Hopefully it'll be dinner now that we're eating together and breaking bread.
Exactly.
Maybe Mexico City soon or
that
somewhere.
Would be perfect. Okay. All right. Well, I think this wraps us up. Thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you.
It's great chatting with you as always.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Okay, that's it for today, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. If you are new to Barstool Investor and you like this content, please don't hesitate to subscribe to this podcast on whatever is your podcast medium of choice. We also have a newsletter that goes out monthly into which you can subscribe to, meetups that happen in various parts of California, and articles that are posted very regularly. You can find all of those free resources on www.barstoolinvestor.com. And of course, if you like this episode, please don't hesitate to leave a nice review for us so others can learn about this show too. See you next time.